It was a beautiful summer day in the year of 1830. In the ancient German University of Heidelberg, a young man sat composing a letter. "Dear Mother," he wrote, "I have tried to follow your advice and continue with my studies, but it's no use. I definitely do not want to be a lawyer. You know the plans I made a long time ago. Please give me your permission to carry them out, for I shall never be happy unless I can study music. Your loving son, Robert." At the age of 16, Robert Schumann had lost his father. It was a hard blow for the boy. August Schumann, a book publisher of good education and refined taste, had encouraged his son to study both literature and music. He had bought him a good piano on which the youngster played away to his heart's delight. Robert even conducted a little orchestra, assembling those of his schoolmates who could play a string or wind instrument. What happy days these were! After his father's death, everything changed. Robert's mother and his guardian persuaded him to choose a good, respectable profession, such as that of a lawyer, instead of making music. Obediently, the young man entered the University of Leipzig and later went to Heidelberg. However, he spent more time playing the piano and composing than studying law. Again and again, he begged his mother to let him take lessons with the famous piano teacher Friedrich Wieck in Leipzig. When she finally gave her consent, Robert jubilantly returned to this city. Robert threw himself eagerly into his work. He respected and admired his teacher, who was an excellent pedagogue and a strict disciplinarian. Professor Wieck's own daughter, Clara, a little girl of 9, had already become known as one of the most accomplished pianists in the city. Her father was immensely proud of Clara, gave her daily lessons, and anticipated a great future for his prodigy. Robert also listened to her development with interest. He came to the house very often, and used to spend hours with Clara, telling her stories or romping with her in the garden like an older brother. Robert made very good progress on the piano. He never tired of practicing difficult exercises to strengthen his fingers. One day, he even invented a little contraption to hold back one finger at a time while the others were exercised, to make them independent. This was a foolhardy thing to do and had tragic consequences. A few weeks later, Schumann realized that the fourth finger of his right hand was lame. doctor was consulted. After examining Robert's hand, he said gravely, "You have injured the muscle, young man. This damage is incurable." "You mean I shall have to give up my career?" And the doctor responded, "I am afraid so." This was a terrible blow for young Schumann, but he bore it with admirable courage. After some time had passed, Robert shook off his despair and decided that not even this accident would keep him from the thing he loved. If he could not become a pianist, he would write music instead. And so the handicap turned out to be a blessing in disguise, giving the world one of its most famous composers. Schumann began the study of composition with a theory teacher named Dorn. Soon, his first works for piano were published: the charming Papillon, the Toccata, the C Major Fantasy, and the brilliant gay Carnival. Up to that time, Schumann had composed music for the piano only, and quite naturally, with Clara in mind. The young girl had made her first public appearance in Leipzig with enormous success, and was now touring all over Germany. Every time she returned, Robert surprised her with new works which she studied eagerly, adding them to her concert repertoire. Here were two artists who seemed created for each other. Out of their friendship grew a tender, romantic love, the tie that was to bind them for the rest of their lives. In his superb song, Dedication, Schumann speaks of these feelings. Shattered. When Robert asked for Clara's hand in marriage, Professor Wieck flew into a violent rage. This was not the future he had planned for his brilliant daughter. Marry a struggling musician and give up her career to keep house for Schumann? Never. He took Clara to Dresden to separate her from Robert and threatened to kill him should he try to get near her. next 4 years were spent in anguish and despair by the lovers, who could not even write to each other. But Clara and Robert remained steadfast. As a last resort, they applied for help to a court of law and won the case. In 1840, despite her father's efforts to stop them, Clara Wieck and Robert Schumann were married. Was filled with happiness. Schumann himself called this first year of their marriage his song year. It was as if his pen overflowed with tender melodies, and he created a wealth of beautiful songs, more than 100. One of the most enchanting and poetic is Der Nussbaum, The Nut Tree. During the next year, 1841, Schumann turned to orchestra music and wrote two symphonies, which later were followed by a third and a fourth. He called the first one Spring Symphony. This work of jubilant beauty shows that spring indeed reigned in the composer's heart when he wrote it. Another one, the Rhenish Symphony, is a salute to the Rhine, the broad, majestic German river. The last movement depicts a gay Rhenish festival. Another year, and new forms of compositions aroused Schumann's interest. In an unbroken flow of creative power, he wrote several great works of chamber music. Among them, three string quartets, a piano quartet, and a piano quintet. All these compositions are masterpieces in form and inspiration. By now, Schumann was recognized as one of the leading composers of the Romantic school. Much of his fame he owed to his devoted wife and her continuous efforts. Clara, the greatest woman pianist of her time, used every opportunity to bring her husband's works before the public. When Schumann had written his enchanting piano concerto, It was Clara who played the first performance, with Robert conducting the orchestra. It was an enormous success. Thunderous applause filled the hall. On the stage, the happy couple appeared, hand in hand, to receive the ovation. Schumann and his wife made many concert tours all over Europe. Once, they spent 4 full months in Russia, where they were received with great honors, overcrowded halls, and an invitation to play at the court of the Tsar. Clara chose the Carnival, and completely won over her aristocratic audience. The strain of this tour, however, almost exhausted the couple's strength. It was midwinter. They had to travel in open sleighs from town to town, across endless plains buried under snow. For miles, not a hut was to be seen. The howling of hungry wolves sounded from a distance. How happy the artists were to come home at long last and embrace their children. There was, by now, a whole houseful of little ones, 4 boys and 4 girls to take care of. For the children, he wrote 2 of his immortal masterpieces, The Album for the Young and The Scenes from Childhood. Both are among the standard works still studied by young piano players. Who does not know The Merry Farmer or the ever-beautiful Träumerei, Dream? To provide for his large family, Schumann accepted a teaching position at the newly founded conservatory in Leipzig, and also worked diligently as the editor of a music magazine, which he had helped create while still a student in 1834. His brilliant essays and concert reviews were widely read and helped many a struggling musician on his way to a career. Schumann, being of a noble nature and completely free from envy, was one of the first critics to call Chopin a genius. He also foretold a great future for a young composer who later became his and Clara's most devoted friend, Johannes Brahms. 1843 found Schumann busy with a huge task. He produced an oratorio for solo voices, chorus, and orchestra called Paradise and the Paris. It met with great success, but the strain of working at high speed seemed to have impaired the composer's health. Schumann had always been a retiring, dreamy man, and so silent that he sometimes did not speak a single word for many hours. Now, he became strangely excitable, complained of bad headaches, and seemed to hear voices nobody else could hear. It was the beginning of a dreadful mental disease. In 1850, a friend offered Schumann a position as music director and conductor in the German town of Düsseldorf. With great anticipation, he and his family moved once more. For a while, everything went well. Schumann conducted the town orchestra and choral society, continued to compose, and seemed in good spirits. But after 2 years, symptoms of his disease appeared again. Soon, he was no longer able to do any work. One evening, during a carnival, while people danced in the streets of gay Düsseldorf, Schumann tried to commit suicide by jumping in the Rhine. He was saved, but only to be confined to an insane asylum where he died in 1856. A great genius had come to a tragic end, but his music lives and will be enjoyed forever.